Hey, I'm Jake Brennan, and I want to tell you about Disgraceland, the award-winning music and true crime podcast that I host. Disgraceland tells the stories of musicians getting away with murder and behaving very badly. Fleetwood Mac, Nipsey Hussle, Cardi B, Ozzy Osbourne, Taylor Swift, Tupac, The Beatles, Amy Winehouse, Jay-Z, The Grateful Dead, and so many more. This is not the music history you've heard before. This is an uncensored, immersive look at the lives of musical icons as seen through the crimes they've committed or that have been perpetrated against them. Did Jerry Lee Lewis murder his fifth wife? What really happened to Sam Cooke in that seedy motel at 3 a.m.? And how did the Rolling Stones wind up sleeping with the First Lady? Wait, what? New episodes of Disgraceland drop every Tuesday with bonus episodes released on Mondays and Thursdays. So get in, buckle up, and join me in Disgraceland. Available right now, wherever you get your podcasts. Rock and roll.
Hi, this is Lowell Tolhurst, co-founder of The Cure.
And this is Budgie, co-founder of The Creatures, drummer with The Slits, and Susie and the Banshees.
Welcome to Curious Creatures.
Life after punk.
You may think you know the territory, but we drew the map.
We have a blast off.
Hello and welcome. This is Curious Question Time.
Curious Question Time. Are we doing a kind of low-voiced, close-to-the-mic version?
I thought we could. I thought it'd be sounds, kind of fun.
It does sound rather good, yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, maybe we should step back up to a regular.
So this one is from, and this is for you, this one. So you want to pay attention.
You can join in though, lol. I'm not going to hog the question.
I will join in. And this is from Eugene Huffman.
Nice.
And Eugene says, love your podcast, and I've always been a Banshees boy.
Oh, righty-ho.
But I have to say, I've enjoyed listening to Lol as well and getting to know him. Hope he's enjoying Los Angeles. We are in North Hollywood here. And Budgie, we have on our destinations list to visit, maybe even eventually end up in Berlin.
Hey, see.
Although I've been a Banshees fan since my long ago high school days, which opened up a new world, whole new world for me, and the music got me through some rough times then. If I had to pick between the two, and to be completely honest, the Creatures would win out. Ooh. My partner, Frederick, and I often talk about how excited we were to hear Anima Animus, exquisite dark electronic. Even the Gift Horse CDs that followed, Rocket Ship, Red Wrapping Paper, seemed to hint at continuing in that direction. The song, I'm Here, Another Planet, with Juno Reactor, etc. It feels that High was a detour that happened in the midst of things, which gave us an entire unique album I also love. And then, of course, after that, things took their own directions, as they often do in life. My question, Eugene actually does have a question.
Right? There's a question coming. Okay, because I'm just enjoying the letter. And I imagine it's like a letter, lol. I imagine it like, in a sort of thin leaf paper, you know, blue, maybe with a slight fragrance on it. You never know. I mean, these are things you don't get an email, do we? Don't get like a hint of scent on the on the correspondence anymore.
My brother in Australia wrote me my last handwritten letter that I received, and it was on. He was traveling and he found my book in an airport. And he bought it because he knew I was writing, but he didn't realize it was out. And so he saw a picture of me on the front of this book and thought, I'd better buy that. And he bought it and read it on the plane home back to Australia from wherever he was. And he said, I thought I must write you a handwritten letter as opposed to just an email. He said, I'll call you because, you know, there's such a lot of our history together in there and things I want to tell you about, you know, about our father and,
yes,
mum and stuff, and so that was very nice.
Oh, that's very sweet
to get a handwritten letter from
my mum. Get the handwritten letter. I talk about it fondly as if I used to get lots of handwritten letters with a fragrance in them. Of course, I didn't get any letters
that said never darken our doorsteps again, and if we ever see you, we'll arrest you.
I'm sure I used to join clubs just so they would write to me, you know, join like the dinky toy model club. Say, look, I've got a letter.
Okay, so I'm going to give you Frederick's almost handwritten kind of lettery.
Okay.
Lettery
I'll imagine
email.
It, so.
Yeah. Yes. So my question would be, do you feel that if the Creatures continued, you would have both continued the exploration of drums, percussion, and vocal with electronic elements? Frederick and I often daydream of what that might have been like. Side note, I'm also a fan of Annie Bandez, and your live drumming on Bitching Song really brought that track to a whole new level. All of our best, Eugene and Frederick.
Wow.
So there you go. You have some big, big fans.
Yes, well, it's very nice to be thought about and listened to and commended all those things. And it's an interesting question. Of course, it posits the idea of continuation where there was none.
Right.
And who knows? Oh. It's a bit, I mean, it is, isn't it? The Creatures came out of the Banshees. The Banshees was only one more person, really.
Right.
For the bulk of its time.
Yeah.
In a way, you know, the Banshees that I started were only two people, the one that I joined.
Yeah, like I've said to you before, in my mind, you know, the Banshees, they were like that early incarnation and then it all split up. Then when you came along, that was the Banshees. And that is, like you say, just you, Sue, and Severin. And, you know, that was the whole nucleus of everything. So
kind of at the point of going back to I've forgotten his name,
Eugene's
observation that Anima Animus being the first recording, the first music we'd done after the Banshees had finished, had stopped, we got back together again 7 years later for the tour. And we actually interrupted what we were doing at that point, I think. Hold on a second. What on earth happened there? Just trying to figure out what the scheme of things. But because I know that we'd started to do some writing. Yes, we had. And it was whilst doing the Banshees reunion that we got the idea and the opportunity to remain in Japan where the tour ended up in Tokyo.
Right.
And do a session on my birthday. I think it was in 2002.
Yeah.
Which is when the 7 Year Itch took place. So August 21st, 2002, Leonard, Eto and myself went into Gok Studios and recorded about an hour and a half's worth of drums.
Right.
And filmed it at the band called X Girl, Fujiko, Merilo, and I can't remember the names. But so Susie and I stayed behind when everybody else had left. And it was really unexpected, but really spontaneous, which is kind of the way we always thought the best stuff happened anyway. B-sides, some of the kind of spontaneous, the way the Creatures started, it kind of was spontaneous whilst the band had kind of gone off, you know, John and Steve had gone off for a bevy or a cup of tea.
Yeah.
But Anima Animus was kind of caught between the two camps, really. It was kind of pushing that way. But there was a lot of experimentation with synths and experimentation with, like, kind of atmospherics and looping. And
this was why you were in Japan, right?
No, see,
no, it's after.
Anima Animus was a studio album. It started in France where we were living and mixed in New York because we thought we should because we got a good deal in the studio and we thought we'd, you know, different energy. So we were still thinking in terms of how the Banshees did things.
Right.
But every time the Creatures came back together, we kind of also treated it as a kind of adventure.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'd been to Hawaii for the first one and we went to Spain for the second one, Boomerang. And the third one would be became Anima Animus. So started in France and finished in New York with sessions in London. It's a long-winded answer, but it's kind of posing, like, what would we have done next? As I say, I think by High, which was just drums and voice, it was a lot more simple in approach. Right. And so it very much, because I, at that point, stopped after High, stopped playing. You know, I was helping out Juno Reactor.
Right.
It's actually a call from Ben. And so I became, I was a great, a kind of a release, really, to not be responsible, not shouldering the responsibility of getting the band together.
Right.
You know.
Right.
I was just, I became the drummer in a band, which I hadn't been for a long time.
Right.
A long time. Yeah. And that's kind of what I was doing. And so, really, when you and I got together,
right,
just over 2 years ago,
yeah,
and the music we've done together,
yeah,
is kind of more like where I think I wanted to go.
Yeah,
and I don't know if that's where the Creatures would have gone, but I feel that's a long time between the Creatures High, you know, in what year was that? 2004.
Right.
So we're talking like 16 years later.
Yeah. Wow.
You know, so that's a long time without doing any recording.
That's as long as my niece has been alive. You know, I think you hit a good point there. It's like music always in its best point is like a little adventure as you're going out and doing it. Most things that are worthwhile in life are like that, you know. And suddenly, by the process of doing them, you find yourself again and you find that you're in this right position. I went to a wedding yesterday and it was very interesting because, you know, the person who was officiating the wedding was going, you know, like, what's good about getting married is the fact that, you know, maybe you have some chaos in your existence, you know, and suddenly this relationship brings everything back into focus and things are not so chaotic, either for one or for two of you or for both, you know, the whole situation. And I was thinking about that. I was thinking, well, yeah, that's true of that situation, love, but also, you know, love of creation does that too. It takes, you know, stuff out of the void that's whirring around, you know,
yeah,
being very ambivalent towards anything, and you suddenly make something good out of it.
Isn't that strange? We hit parallels so many times. My wife and I were talking last night. I just got back from a trip away. You know, I'd been away from the family for over a week, and prior to that, I was away doing some live work.
Yeah,
and so, but we were talking. What is it about, you know, that the kind of creative energy or something? And we also came to the conclusion that it was to do with it's to do with chemistry and relationship.
Sure, absolutely.
And I know that when I met Susie and Severin, it wasn't long before that I felt a special connection to Susie.
Right.
And it manifested in the first Creatures recordings. And then it kind of, we could put it on hold in a way.
Right.
But by the end of Boomerang, I think we just kind of, in many ways, had run a course.
Yeah, and that happens, if you like, too. That happens too. I'm sure of it. You know, it's like,
And I think that's again is coming round to where we are now, that the opportunistic meeting we had, and I, you know, and with Joe and Kevin, people who were around as well. Right. It was kind of like planets kind of orbiting and coming back into some kind of alignment, and you know, it's just, it's a strange thing. I always knew I'd have to come to LA, but I didn't know why, and I didn't know how it was going to manifest.
Right.
I just said manifest twice.
Well, that's what's happening. I mean, it's funny because you're right. I think, you know, I often say to people, I used to think when I was a younger man that life was a sort of linear process. You know, you do this, that happens, and then you do this and other things. And I realized it's not really at all. It's like concentric circles, you know, and you fall from one or go up to the next one. And you just, you know, you keep circling the same, well, maybe refining the same process, because I know what I'm doing with you feels like the best of things that I've ever done, but it feels more refined again with a better palette. I have a better set of tools, emotionally and you know, spiritually and philosophically to deal with everything, which I didn't have when I was, you know, 19.
We've been honing our craft whilst waiting.
Yeah. So that was a good question. Yeah. That was a good question.
Yeah, thanks, Eugene. That was really it's good. Questions that spark the thought.
Yeah.
Whether we answer the question or not is another matter. Yeah. We'll leave that to Eugene.
Yeah. Well, I think
he
might come to a conclusion, Eugene and Frederick. They might come to a conclusion in the next shorter period of time about what's happening and stuff, and they will say, there is all the connections. All right.
Yes.
Next question. It's not number anything. What am I talking about?
moving on. Yeah, moving swiftly on.
This is one for me and you. This is from Josefina Sandberg. And she says, "Hi, Lol Budgie. Hi, Josefina. My name is Josefina Sandberg, nicknamed Joe."
Hi, Joe.
Yeah, hi, Joe. "And I'm 16 and from Fairview, Pennsylvania. I'm wondering what you guys think about the teenagers now who still worship The Cure and The Banshees. Are you surprised that kids are still listening to your music the way they were 40 years ago? Well, The Cure and The Banshees and other bands will be forever iconic and so important to young people like me. Thank you for the wonderful podcast. Love, Joe." Well, that's a very sweet message, isn't it? It's very nice.
It is. It's lovely. But I think that this, because... put this over to you, Lol. Are you surprised that they youth, our young people?
I don't know.
Looking back to music was formed when we were young people.
Yeah, we had that conversation, didn't we, with Mr. Sargent a few months ago?
Yes.
It's like, you know, he posited, young Will posited. Well, he's probably a bit younger than me. He might not be. He might be older than me. Anyway, he said, wouldn't it be weird if when we were teenagers that we listened to like Glenn Miller or, you know, our parents' music, you know, which is basically what Josefina's talking about. There are people that are 60 that listen to us and people who are 16, obviously. I'd like to say it's because we were geniuses and we knew that was going to happen, but I had no bloody idea at all. Of course not, you know. But I think there's something that maybe was circulating at that time that we put into the music that is relevant at a particular point in your life and relevant to other points as well, but really gets you at that point where you're going from being, from being a teenager into being an adult, you know, and it tends to become most apparent then. And I think that's something that's always going to happen. I mean, you know, if I think about what we listened to as teens, a lot of it is still popular now as well, you know. So music's a universal language, right? And it has something inside. What was it Shakespeare said, you know, hath charms to calm the savage breast. And it's true. Yeah. True.
How old's Shakespeare?
How old Shakespeare? Well, now he's very bloody old. I don't think he's around anymore. I haven't seen him.
When did he release his first album?
Yeah, probably.
You see where I'm going?
Are we talking about Robbie Shakespeare? Are we talking about William Shakespeare?
Hi, okay. Bill.
It's, Bill the Bard.
No, it struck me. If I went to art college, I went to art college in about the, you know, early 70s.
Yeah.
And if you ask what was modern art, you would think it would be something from like current or 10 years previous. Right. Of course, there was stuff that was happening in the 60s. We had Bridget Riley, we had a lot of op art, we had abstract expressionism. But modern art was like, you know, modern art was coined around the time of the turn of the century, like 1912, 1914.
Right.
But, you know, so we're talking, you know, Marcel Duchamp and some great thinkers around. I'm trying to think of the like the Dadaists and who were cited a lot in punk when we were talking about sure. punk, and they say, yeah. "Oh, it's influenced by Dada," as yeah. if Dada was around in the 60s.
Yeah,
and we were like in
late 70s.
And Dada's way back into like before the Second World War.
Yeah,
it's interesting. It's kind of that music. As a recorded medium and rock and roll, etc. But there right. was, a lot of, they were leaning on other cultures as well, music from other times. You're not going to hear it on the radio, but you somehow find it finds its way into the discussion and the melting pot. Glenn Miller's a good one because I used to love putting Glenn Miller on the jukebox in my local pub.
Right, I remember you telling me that. I was quite surprised. You're a dark horse, Mr. B.
It's because of the brass arrangements.
Yeah, that's what it is, yes.
I love that clarinet and brass thing that was going on, and that found its way into Boomerang, the Creature stuff, very much. But it found its way first into blues. It found its way into early Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
When Peter Green was still with him, and it from there it found its way to the Creatures.
Peter Green, it's he of the long fingernails, the extra long fingernails. That's Pete Green.
Yeah. Especially now.
Well, yeah, because he's not around either, is he? So,
it could, is it surprising? Not really. No.
No.
No, it's I was traveling and I switched the TV on in the hotel just two nights ago. And apart from Shaun the Sheep, which I think is amazing,
right,
done by the same people who do Creature Comforts and stuff, it's all in French. I was in France.
Yeah, that's okay.
And then the next thing that I couldn't get to sleep. I turned all the lights off and everything. I thought I can't sleep. I need some like background noise. And I switched the TV back on. And it was Genesis. Yeah. And it's Genesis as they are, not quite today, but maybe a few years back when they were doing something in Rome. There was like a ridiculous number of people. It was a free concert, I think. And they started their set with something that was when Peter Gabriel was in the band, an album that I bought when I first went to art college, which was Selling England by the Pound.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Which may have been in one of your old collection boxes.
I'm pretty certain it was, yeah. Yeah.
The sun beats down and I lie on the bench. I can always hear them talk, right?
Yeah, you could tell me by the... You could tell me... me, I'm just a lawnmower. You could tell me by the way I walk, yeah.
There were kids in the front row of something like 200 to maybe 500,000 people. There was a lot of people in this wow. huge arena. Wasn't even an arena. It was just a huge sea of people. And down the front, there were these teenagers, not much, singing along to every word. It's just, it's a curious phenomena, but, why not?
I'm going to ask you a question that I know Curious Creatures listeners will be interested in. What's your favourite Genesis album?
Oh, gosh. see, I don't know that many. And I did try and go back to early Genesis because I came to them on Selling England by the Pound.
Right.
And I did, because it's great when you watch programs with the guys from Genesis, and they call it England, that one. And then they got the Lamb.
The Lamb, yeah. Well, I have to say.
No, they don't call it the Lamb, they call it Lamb.
Lamb.
Yeah,
Lamb.
When we're doing Lamb, well, I think it was a bit different with Lamb.
Yeah.
The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway.
Right.
Which was a great title and a great concept. But for me, and I looked at Nursery Crimes, and I looked at Foxtrot, and I looked, and I kind of even then realized there was a lot of stuff I didn't really. I really liked it, almost the accessible start side of the thing. I liked Gabriel's lyrics, if they were his lyrics all. But it was a similar thing. So I'd say Selling England by the Pound. Can you tell me where my country lies? Said the uniform to his true love's eyes. Gabriel was off his head, right? He was a nutter.
Yeah, pretty much. well, I liked the very earliest albums with things like Watcher of the Skies on and stuff because it was very, very super dramatic and it was great to play loud when you're like 12 years old in your bedroom.
Otherworldly.
Yeah. But the one album that I really still like, even today, which we weren't allowed to say back in 1979 when we were all punks.
No, because you had to hide them.
Yeah, had to hide them. Yeah. Lamb.
You like Lamb?
Lamb's like Genesis punk album. It really is. So, and it's very mystical. It's mystical punk, really. You know, mystical punk for older people. So it was kind of, yeah, cool. So that was my favorite.
You never hear us talk about the Genesis in you know.
That's why I thought I'd bring it up.
Yes. Well, I brought it up first. I must admit.
You did. You brought it
up. And it's, I wish Phil, you know, I met him once, very briefly.
Yeah.
He won't remember because it was in the toilets at Top of the Pops down in Shepherd's Bush.
Oh, yeah, no, he definitely won't remember it. Really.
No, because he was walking in. I think he had his saxophone with him. He might have had a sax. I can't remember. Maybe I made that part up. But because you can when you remember things. So Phil Collins walks in. I'm sure it was a saxophone he was holding. Oh, I'm not sure it was. Right. Anyway, and it was just like, all right, mate. So, all right, mate. No. And he was probably doing one of his solo things. It probably wasn't with the band. Right. It was probably... Right. You know, Phil doing...
Because he's a bit of a geezer, isn't he? He's a bit of a...
Oh, yeah.
A geezer, yeah, as I've heard. Yeah. So here's a drumming question. This seamlessly tails into the next question, which is a drumming question.
Okay. And
it says, hi, Budgie. This is from Keith Willett. Keith says, hi, Budgie. Keith, drummer from early 80s band The Void, asks, so he's putting his thing in the third person. Ever played a Ludwig Black Beauty snare drum, Budgie? What do you think of them? used a Supraphonic in those days and restarted drumming a couple of years back and bought a virtually unused one on eBay. The resonance ringing you get is something you can really play off rhythmically. Loving it and always loved your drumming. Well, I'm going to leap in with 2 feet here just beforehand because Keith, I had a Black Beauty. I had a Black Beauty and I played it, and I know exactly what you're talking about. That bugger rings like buggery. And you have to get the old gaffer tape out and put lots of it all over the drum to get that big but really kind of, you know, deady sound.
It's a good gear question, isn't it?
It's a good gear question.
I'd love to. I never had one. I never had a Ludwig Black Beauty. They were always around. In fact, they were always requested in studios.
Yes. Get the Black Beauty. Yes.
And it was one of those that was requested when you were renting a kit, which came along later. Because, of course, we used to travel with our own kits.
Yes.
Luckily.
Yes.
So mine was mostly the Gretsch kit. Yeah. And the snare drums, they always changed. Because I could never find the one that made the right sound for everything. I think it was probably because we tried so many different ones in the studio for the recordings.
Yeah.
And then trying to just get the one that worked well live. I think I ended up with ridiculous. I had like Pearl snare drums that sounded good.
Right.
They had these free floating shells. That was a new concept. And that's really drum companies like always trying to bring something new to the table, really to drum up, you know, get people interested in their drums. I suppose the Ludwig drums were classic. They didn't change that much. Interestingly, it's a metal shell.
Yes.
And that was always the most useful and the one that worked and cut through.
Yeah.
Because we're a loud band, you know.
Right.
Banshees were a three-piece loud band.
Right. I had a couple of deep metal snares from John Bradbury from the Specials. I bought them off of him because
those were like 12-inch deep ones or something.
Yeah. And I bought those off of him, and that was the same reason, because those things were loud. And
that's like a military marching snare.
Yeah, yeah, they were very loud, and I loved them. But
yeah,
you know, but you had to get the snare stand down as low as possible, because otherwise you couldn't. You know, you were playing it like you were tipping on the topping, as they say.
Oh, those!
I don't think they say that at all. But
the Gretsch kit had a 24-inch kick drum, bass drum. I think it was a 24. It might have only been a 22. But the rack tom, the center rack tom, was 15x14. It was ridiculous. It was like the size of a floor tom.
Yeah,
almost.
Yeah,
and quite a lot of drummers. The guy from XTC had big toms.
Terry Chambers. He liked big toms, didn't he? He liked big concert toms where Andy would stick his head inside them as Terry was playing on stage, which thinking about it, it must have been very painful. But yeah.
Yes, Andy wouldn't have noticed the pain. We're talking about Andy who played with The Cure. XTC.
I'm talking about the singer in XTC.
Well, that explains everything. I think everything about XTC that I wondered about explains it. That Andy Partridge put his head inside Terry Chambers. Terry Chambers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
As he's playing.
No, but what my point was, it was to do with the size of the depth of the drums that we just went like, wow, they're big, they're great, and you set them up, and you go, how do I get my hands up on top of?
Yeah, that's right.
You get longer sticks, so you start using long sticks, and that's like that makes you play differently again. Yeah. All these things were kind of going the wrong way about it. Everybody else I've seen in so many things about drumming, they're about feel and emulating your favorite drummer. Yeah. We were all out there going like, "What's the biggest kit that's loud?"
We went the opposite way. We went the opposite way.
We had to find sort of decorum and gentilité a bit later, you know. Curious Creatures is created and presented by Lol Tolhurst and Budgie.
Producer, Joe Wong.
Producer and audio designer, Dan Didier.
Executive producer, Mark Cates.
Associate producer, Sophie Wild.
Digital marketing, Margie Taylor.
Art and logo design, Justin Thomas Kay.
Music production, Jackknife Lee.
Curious Creatures is on the web, and you can access us at www.curiouscreaturespodcast.com.
And you can reach us on Instagram and Facebook at Curious Creatures Official, Twitter at Cura Creatures.
To find more of the best music podcasts, visit doubleelvis.com or follow at doubleelvis on Instagram or at doubleelvis on Twitter.
Curious Creatures is a production of LXB LLC 2022.